Hi, and welcome to this new episode of The Light Leaders. Today, we're going to talk relationships, we're going to talk polarity, we're going to talk intimacy. So it's going to be a really interesting topic with Orica. Thank you for coming to the show, Orica.
Thank you so much, Alex.
So to give a bit of context, I've been following, we know each other from Bali. And I know your man, Kevin. He's been on two of my podcasts, this one, The Light Leaders, and another podcast I had at the time called Ubudong Tea. And I love you both for the content you create on many different topics, but especially on relationship, especially that now you're together and you're both into that field. And I really like what you post. And I'm in a relationship myself, and I think it's really interesting as a man to have men I look up to, but also to have, I feel you're one of the women in the intimacy space where I read your posts and I'm like, ah, she gets me, like she gets men. And I think that's really important too. And it feels really good to read. And we like to share that with my partner. And the comparison I would make is, for example, she sent me, you probably know Chris Perry. Anyway, he's a great man who does like kind of spoken words on relationship, and quite a few women are like, oh, he really gets women. And so I think it's really interesting to have all these different perspectives, men who speak for women who speak for women who speak for men. And you speak for both, of course, but as a man, I can feel, sometimes I read your post and it feels really good. And yeah, so I wanted to have a conversation with you on polarity, on intimacy. I feel you and Kevin kind of nailed it in a way. So yeah, that'll be the topic for today. We'll go about being intentional for polarity. We'll talk about surrender, submission, even as a woman, gender roles. We'll talk about who initiates sex and intimacy. We'll talk about having community support also around you. So that's going to be a really interesting episode. As usual, for the listener, I'll put chapters below so they can go to the sections that interest them the most. And if you want to support, you can like, subscribe, share. So let's get into it. Thank you, Orica. And before we get started, what are you grateful for today?
I'm really grateful for my home. I'm really grateful for the home that we get to create and turn this house that we have into something that is very cozy for our hearts, our bodies, our community, our art.
Amazing. And you're now in Austin after some time in Bali and also traveling in Costa Rica.
Yes, I had a long nomadic phase. A very long nomadic phase that lasted more than a decade, actually. And yeah, we left Bali, and right now we're living in Austin. We live in the, you know, American suburbia, which I thought would never ever happen in my life. But I am so happy to have the stability, the grounding, which I know many people who live in Bali sometimes long for. So It's a very different phase in my life where it's more about nesting and building and grounding.
Amazing. So can you share a little bit of your backstory, especially leading to your interest in intimacy, relationship, polarity?
Yes. So it all started off with sexuality, actually. It wasn't straight into relationship work or intimacy. It was mostly working with sacred sexuality, because personally, that was the first thing that actually tangibly changed my life. As many of us, I had done talking therapy, plant medicine, vipassana, meditation, rainbow gatherings, like you name it, I did it. I was a yoga teacher who was also partying techno at night. You know, I had a lot of different sides of the spectrum trying to find that thing while also having insomnia, feeling pretty low and pretty depressed, working the corporate and, you know, the usual thing that makes us feel that we're missing the point and almost that we're living someone else's template. That's not our life. And it was only through discovering the potency of my eros in a very practical way and actually working with that energy that I started feeling that I'm actually in control of my own life. I have an agency in the way I am showing up in relationships, and I have a co-creative power with God in my life, right? So, for example, when I discovered the beauty of sacred sexuality, it meant that I had to do some profound somatic healing and meeting my deeper trauma, meeting my deeper shadows that had been buried in for a very long time, and leading to things like insomnia, for example. That was one of my main challenges for a long time. And through that, through emotional alchemy, I came to my aliveness. You know, I came to a place where I felt that I belong. I felt that I can feel, right? And with that energy, I noticed that my external life began actually shifting in very real ways, from starting my business to creating many new opportunities to changing countries, right? So it just gave me so much power in believing that if I want this, I can have it, right? And that was the very beginning of basically a whole new chapter in my life.
And so then, like, you started getting really into sacred sexuality and like coaching about it, sharing about it too, and I guess experimenting more with it.
Yes, I mean, I didn't start working with it straight away. I don't think it's in integrity to discover something and start teaching it straight away. So I had years of having very, very devoted self-practice. And I had a lot of very intense experience with that. You know, it led me to places like the Arctic. I ended up living in the Arctic at once for a few months because I wanted to build my business. I wanted to invest in mentorship, but there was a time where I didn't have the money. So I ended up getting a job in the most random place on Earth, in the Arctic, in a place called Svalbard. That's the closest human settlement to the North Pole, basically. And it just led me to these portals of my most intense, like, dark night of the soul, my soul's initiations, right? So by really saying, yes, I want this and I'm going to create this, I ended up going to these really extreme places. And yes, it was living in the Arctic, but also it was a very genuine and radical encounter with God through my own body, right? Mm-hmm. When I put myself in such harsh circumstances in the polar night, where I had to face my deepest fear of aloneness, because there was literally no one I could talk to without explaining my words, for example, right? I had to put on a mask to be someone else than I was. And meeting those fears through my body and going through the layers of emotions and being in a deep practice space, that changed everything for me, right? So yes, I say sacred sexuality, but deep down for me, it's the body. Sacred sexuality was the core access point, but deep down, it's my emotions, it's my intuitions, it's my womb, right? And through these spaces, we as women, we're descending below the neck, descending below the heart, and going basically to all the places that we're told not to go as women. Sexuality, desire, pleasure, intuition, the womb, our bleed, our blood, right? So that was my journey.
And was it mainly like a journey with yourself of, like, let's say, solo cultivation until Kevin, or like, you want to share on this?
Sure.
And is that what you recommend also for women, to first explore yourself before opening up to a man?
There is no one single method that I would prescribe to, you know, everyone. That's that a thing that would be efficient, because, you know, there's people who have been married for decades, and there are people who actually want to be single and they don't want to really, right? So that really, really depends. And at the very beginning of my journey, I was single. I happened to be single for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And I did have partners that were not long-term relationships. I wanted a long-term partnership, but I definitely had to clean up a lot of my inner energetics to be able to enter a relationship from a place that was secure. And yes, before Kevin, I had multiple long-term relationships. So I was already in the phase of back-to-back relationships. And every relationship was maybe not fully compatible, but getting closer and closer and closer to what I was desiring. So at the beginning, I got to explore my own, what I call self-sexuality, my relationship to my own body in a very intimate way. But that eventually, you know, opened up the pathway for me to meet incredible partners who were already, you know, doing their own work when it comes to sexuality.
Amazing. And yeah, it's and then obviously I guess you discovered yourself through just with yourself, through your self-practice, and then it's like that balance of not really needing the other, but at the same time acknowledging that it's nicer with the other, right? So now you're on a path, I guess, with Kevin, it's a very like more like a life, like let's say lifelong partnership with monogamous, like I guess it's more the trajectory you're on. And why is that so appealing to you?
Beautiful question. So firstly, you know, what really had to change in my life is, as you said, like, can I find a place within where I actually genuinely feel happy without the man? And that was the internal setting that I had to rewire before entering, you know, my phase of beautiful long-term relationships. Because anything else prior to that was, you know, the classical loop of, I need you, save me, love me, give that to me. And it was completely off, of course.
And then you bond with an attachment avoidance style.
Of course.
Create a
of
dynamic.
The classical scenario, which, you know, serves no one and feels unhealthy. But before discovering somatic work, I could see the pattern as many people, like, I see what's going to happen in week one, week two with that same type of a person, but I could not get out of it. It's like a drug, right? And a lot of people, when they find a pattern that they don't like, they say, I'm just going to journal about it. And maybe next time I'm not going to do it again. Does it work? Never, right? So for me, this is the beauty of somatic work, is when we work with somatics and basically the nervous system, like, we can like go as deep as the emotional charge, as the belief in the unconscious mind in the nervous system, and then we can change it. And so it was only through that that my relationship reality began changing. And to answer your question, of course, it's wonderful to be in the relationship. It's, I believe, the most beautiful experience that we can have as human beings, to really open up fully as love, in devotion, in honesty, you know, in trust. But at the same time, there's also beauty in finding that inner wholeness within, because that inner wholeness doesn't end when you're in a relationship. All the practices that I've shared with you that I've been doing, I'm still doing them, right? I do not allow like any codependency to arise between me and Kevin when it comes to, you know, safety, emotional processing, even pleasure. So it's like always work in progress. Yes, it's very comfortable to, you know, like, give me everything, open me, give me pleasure. But at the same time, if we want to create a lifelong union that's emotionally healthy, mature, and also like sexually polarized, like, the inner work continues at all times.
Well, talking about polarity, I really admire your intentionality on polarity. I think it's a good moment to get into that. I feel something that not many people are intentional about. Then in communities like here, or maybe where you are, in tantric community, it becomes more, let's say, more common. So yeah, you're very intentional about polarity, and your coaching or kind of recommendation, of course, everyone's different, but is to be intentional about it. While many couples, they feel, okay, we're in love, it's great, let's let life flow. Like, sometimes intentionality sometimes looks like it's not going with the flow. For example, if we schedule love appointment, maybe someone is like, well, I want to make love when I want to make love. I don't want it to be like in my schedule, you know? So how do you navigate intentionality, but not breaking the flow and emotion and the truth of the moment?
Yeah, that is a very good question. And actually, right after this interview, we have our love date. So there's a few nuances here. I believe that the most harmful myth that we have been fed in the society is that the sexual passion needs to fade away. And once we buy into this myth, then we do nothing to change that. And then we see, oh, all of my friends, are not making love with their partners and it's tough. They're just like best friends, but no one wants to fuck, right? So it's just so common that unfortunately we have been buying into this as a norm. But I don't think it's a norm. It's definitely not the norm for us. And one of our values in our relationship is to be intentionally ensuring that the Eros is flowing. Because when it's flowing, everything else is fine. If I'm not moving my emotions, if we're not having, you know, the deep sexual chemistry that just like, that like connects us to God, then suddenly everything else goes wrong. I feel like I want to complain. It's like, oh, but you're not doing this. I'm like, it's like.
Do you know Kim Amani?
Yes.
I like when she says, if you complain that your partner or your girlfriend, she's nagging and she's complaining, well, it's because she's not well fucked.
Exactly. Exactly. And to make that happen, of course, is the job of both partners. So when it comes to being intentional, but also being spontaneous, I believe that having some time that's intentional as the baseline, at least for the feminine partner, relaxes the nervous system so much. Because suddenly we can count on having that space that is pure love, that is play, that is flow, which is just so recharging, at least for the feminine partner, right? So when I can count on having this space every week, for us it's weekly, for some couples it's going to be bi-weekly or monthly, really up to the couple, then I can relax. But if I don't trust that this is going to happen, it creates more worry inside of me because I long for this space at all times, right? As a feminine partner, I just long for pure connection, pure merging, right? It's where I open the most as a woman, right? So when I have this on the schedule, we have this on the schedule every week, I know it's going to happen. And therefore, I can relax. And the rest is a bonus. The rest is spontaneous. And also acknowledging the fact that most men will resist that. I've seen this in countless conversations and workshops where the men say, but I don't have the time. It's going to break the spontaneity and the flow. And here's what could change that. It's focusing on the actual space of connection that does not need to be sexual, because often this could create performance anxiety for the man and for the woman, for both actually, right? So when we know that it's just simply a time where we come through conscious connection, maybe it's massage, maybe we do a practice, maybe actually we don't even want to be sexual, we just want to cuddle and spoon, you know, that's also welcome, then this space unfolds into something else, but without having the pressure to ensure that there is a huge orgasm or penetration or anything like that. And then suddenly it just nourishes the relationship so much that the next day, maybe we're going to have the most spontaneous sex because now we're emotionally dropped in, right? So it's not just about having one specific goal.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think it's beautiful to have that time for intimacy. And do you, like, sexuality is definitely a little bit more tricky in the way that, you know, you can plan more easily, cuddling, there's little reason not to. However, when it comes to sexuality, there might be moments when people don't feel like it. So I guess you wouldn't plan lovemaking, for example, or would you?
Oh, yes. Yes and no. So yes, there is a space for the lovemaking to happen. And most of the time it will happen. But anytime, and that's something I've been working on myself, anytime I feel the pressure that I need it, things go wrong. We miscommunicate, we feel there is something off, but anytime I'm actually just able to see how much can I receive him with my entire body and come into my surrender, receptivity, softness, and love, then magic happens. But anytime I come a little bit, just give me that space, that God, give me that openness, that things go wrong. Mm-hmm. And it's true, Alex. Often, for example, when I enter the space, maybe my mind wants to make love, but my body is not there yet. And it's super common. So actually, the way I approach sexuality is that we create a turn on together. It's not that I need to come, you know, like turned on and ready to go. Most of the time, for women, we will need so much more time, firstly, to relax. to connect, to get out of our day, to feel our sensations in the body. More often, I will cry before I'm ready to make love. Sometimes for no reason, sometimes for a reason, that depends. And then it takes time to kind of unravel the layers of the body, remove the shells before we are potentially ready to make love. And may this be like a permission slip to all women and all men, that we as female bodied beings, we need much more time to kind of like honor our entire body first, to open emotionally before we can open sexually.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something we learn a lot in Tantra, for example. Like, for example, here in Bali, and for men, it takes a little bit of time to understand sometimes. I like the image of woman being like water and the man being like fire, and a man can be initiated, excited like an instant, like fire, and then it boils the water gently and slowly. And then but the water can stay hot for longer while the fire can stop in an instant too. So it's like the art of combining these two together. Yes.
And we can help each other. So for example, after this podcast, I'm going to take some time to transition out of my mind into my body. So I'm going to take maybe 5 to 10 minutes to move my body in intuitive ways so that when I come to Kevin, like I'm actually receptive, right? So that I'm not thinking about the things we have just spoken about. So that I'm not thinking about my to-do list and my work. So it takes time to prepare my body for that. For me, this is just an act of my devotional love. And the same thing, you know, Kevin or like, you know, your masculine partner, he can also help you relax and come into the body. One metaphor that I really enjoy is imagining that your woman's body is covered in golden dust. And so to open her body, you want to gather that dust from the peripheries, from every part of your body, to rest her breasts, her heart first. Really take a time to awaken the heart. And then you go to the belly, the womb, and only then you go to the yoni. For the man, it's the opposite. All the golden dust is around your sexual center. You actually want to spread it out, right? So we both support each other to meet in between.
Yeah, cool. Talking about polarity, there's gender roles, right? And so I like that you're unapologetic in your post about, okay, I want to be surrendered and even submissive toward a man I can trust. But before we go deeper into that, just on the gender roles on sexuality itself, and because we talked about pressure, I think like most men, I'm recovering, but still putting pressure on myself on sexual performance. At the same time, I want to be a good lover, and I think that's good too, right? It's like that in between where I don't want to put so much pressure on myself that actually it makes the experience not enjoyable, but also I care. I don't want to be like, oh, whatever, and not practice or not have intention. So I'm also interested sometimes in that gender role. Some people say it's the man's role to initiate sexuality. How do you feel about that?
There's a lot of nuance. It's not that, you know, the man initiates sex and the woman, you know, just chills on the bed. Maybe yes, maybe no. That really depends. The way I perceive it is more through the lenses of energetics. So for me, what works best personally is when my partner is kind of leading us externally, taking care of logistics, appointments, driving, you know, like the logistics of life. He's holding the frame for our relationship. But what I am doing, I am guiding our relationship from within. I'm taking care of our like intimate climate, which is our emotional connection, our sexual pulse, right? I'm always noticing there's something off, even though my partner is amazing in that too, right? He's very intuitive as well. So I'm kind of taking care of that inner flame of our relationship. So sometimes my way of initiating simply means that I'm just sexually, how to say, connected to my body, and I share this with him. It doesn't mean that I'm saying, hey, let's have sex right now, but I come to him with my body. I'm very responsive. I will make an effort if he says something that I love, that he knows that through my entire body, that, oh my God, thank you, right? So I'm always expressing a lot through my body when it comes to sensuality, my nurture, my sadness, right? So my body becomes like a living organism, almost like an antenna, always, you know, indicating him. And again, you see my body is becoming more expressive as I'm talking about this. So my body is always pulsing with aliveness, which kind of invites him to desire me, to take me, to ravish me, to pin me against the wall, right? So I'm kind of inviting him, but very often I'm not directly coming to him and saying, hey, let's have sex, right? So I'm just making a lot of space for him to come to me. I'm enticing his desire.
Yeah, that's interesting. And that's also another topic, actually, which is the communication on desires and how it's done, because it's a little bit tricky sometimes to navigate in the way that in a relationship, I think it's very healthy to be able to speak about desires and to give feedback and to train your man or train your woman on what you like. And at the same time, in the polarity, I feel the woman wants to be felt and doesn't, like, if you start explaining everything all the time, oh, now you touch me there, and now can you bite my neck, and now can you do that? It's a little bit like, it can kill the polarity also, because then you're like too much into maybe coaching the man. So how do you navigate expressing your desires to your man while still not feeling you have to explain all the time?
That's a very good question. So there is a very big difference between expressing a desire, which actually is simply guiding my man how to love me better, versus telling him what to do, versus wanting to change him or to fix him or to coach him, right? So if the desire comes from a place of overflow, I really love how you're kissing the back of my neck, can you kiss me more? I don't think this could ever kill the polarity. However, if I'm telling him, I don't like when you do this, change that, that's going to kill the polarity, right? So it depends from the energy from which I come, whether it's to invite more of something that I'm already enjoying versus kind of telling that he's doing something wrong. And that's totally okay. You know, our partners will do things that we don't enjoy. But instead of shaming them, like, can we simply lovingly redirect them? And there's also, you know, the very important space, which is not during sex, to talk about what we want and what we don't want. And often to have the full conversation about this. And I think that during lovemaking is the best time. Definitely not when we're driving or doing logistics. It's actually a sacred space where we both sit down and say, this is what I need. This is what I would like more of. This is the boundary that I really want to express, right? So having that deeper conversation outside the bedroom, while also in the bedroom, speaking from the positive lenses about things we'll like more.
Yeah, I love that you create those intentional spaces, because otherwise things leak in the wrong timing. Like if you don't have that, you're doing logistics and all of a sudden, you know, the woman feels frustrated because she couldn't express something for months, then it's going to come in the middle of the logistics meeting. And so I think it's all on the other, or it can be on the other end, the opposite, and logistics coming in the middle of lovemaking. What frame do you have? Like, so you have kind of love appointment, can be like King's Night, Queen's Night, can be different ways, but a time for intimacy every week. Yes. I know with my partner, we started doing more like intention for the month. What do you have in terms of, do you have weekly logistics meeting, weekly love appointment, monthly intentional, like which ones do you have?
So we have quite a few things, but we're always experimenting and we're always changing. So yes, we have our weekly love date, which sometimes can involve love making, sometimes not, that depends. And we rotate who's leading the date. So sometimes it's me, 1 week it's me, the next week is Kevin. So that we come up with things that are always, you know, fun and creative. And sometimes, you know, once I felt tired, we're about to travel, I was so busy. So I said, can we just eat ice cream and watch Moana? That was our love date. And that felt amazing, right? Tonight we're doing something more fun. Then on top of this, we have our monthly check-in every first Sunday of the month. It's on our Google schedule. It takes about maybe 1 hour or less, because usually we're very, very good at processing things in the moment. So there's not so much the process, you know. And then we're going to have, again, a few set questions that we're going through, and we're going to come up with new things as well to just really reflect about what's going well, what could be going better, anything we have withheld, any needs that we have. And as I said, any desires that we have for the next month in terms of what we want to maybe upgrade in the relationship, activities we want to have, right? So looking ahead as well. And then we
I think that's good, because I felt when I wanted to do the monthly, like just check in, it looks too negative, you know, it looks too much like, okay, we'll look at what needs to change. So it's nice to also have what we're looking forward to.
Yeah, absolutely. And also celebrating the things that are working well. So acknowledging each other and sharing gratitude. So that is not just, you know, a processing circle, of course. Mm. Yes. And then every week we usually do a silent day where we are not talking for at least 24 hours. So from the morning until the next day, usually we sleep apart at night as well. And we still use the body. So we'll play, we make out, we make animal sounds, which is very fun. But this way we get to remove the mental chatter, the logistics, the little talks in the kitchen that are fun, but they're not exactly necessary, as sometimes they just add more of the mind space than we want to. So it kind of resets everything. And if you need to talk about logistics, we're going to, you know, talk on the notes app or send a WhatsApp message. And it just resets the polarity, especially, you know, we both live together and we work from home. So we're at home most of the time. So we kind of need to engineer almost artificially the spaces of like healthy, separate energy.
Mm. So, and you have two rooms and you sometimes sleep apart, and you feel that's important for polarity?
We have 5 rooms. Yes, very important. So...
So do you have the lovemaking room and then Kevin's room and Ulrika's room and the processing room?
So right now I am in my goddess room. So it's not fully set up because all the fluffy things that are in the different room, but it's like my fluffy room where it's relaxation, women's gatherings, my podcast recording room. Then I have an office. Kevin has his own office. Kevin also has an empty room where the guys come to play video game. So it's just an empty room, but it's like boys gatherings. And then we have our shared master bedroom, right? So we used to sleep half of the week apart for most of our relationship. Right now, the phase where we sleep mostly together feels really good. But for most of the relationship, we slept apart half of the week. We had a schedule, half of the week together, half apart. And it felt amazing for our sexual chemistry. Yeah.
That's cool. One thing when you were talking about what you schedule. So you talked about the monthly check-in, the weekly silent day, talked about the weekly love appointment. Do you have a scheduled time for sex especially, or would that be part of the monthly check-in?
I mean,
like sex... let's say feedback, because you said it's important to create space for feedback on sex, but not during sex. So do you have a specific container for that?
So we're still spontaneous. So we have, I think we're quite radical compared to a lot of couples. If anything comes up in the moment, we're going to speak it in the moment. Right. So if I'm noticing throughout the day that I'm missing something or need something from him, like, I'm going to let him know as soon as I know it myself. So usually we don't wait until the monthly check-in to discuss something, because otherwise, you know, things accumulate and then you're processing the past as opposed to speaking about your emotions in the present moment. So we don't necessarily try to speak about, you know, our sexual needs in the check-in, because most of the time we will discuss it, you know, as things arise. And of course, you know, if it's important, we'll mention it, but I believe it's best not to wait until like a few weeks, you know, in advance to discuss something that's really important to you.
Mm. And do you find it's challenging sometimes? I know the answer. Yeah, of course, it's challenging for women to give feedback to men. And I think it's a big challenge. Like, is there, How do you manage to give feedback? I guess it's also on demand. Like, let's say as a man, I think overall I'm relatively confident, but still I have moments of lack of confidence. And I do feel sometimes like it's tricky, even if it's shared well. Feedback on sexuality and how to be a better lover for a man. I know for me it's very sensitive, because even if it's shared well, there's a part of me that's grateful because I want to be a great lover. And there's a part of me that reinforces that expectation to perform part, where I'm like, I don't know, that like let's say if I went into an archetype of really rejecting it, it'd be like, okay, well, if it's got to be work, you know, I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
So how do you manage giving feedback to men?
It's a great question. And you're right. I think as men and women, we're all very sensitive when it comes to sexuality, because it's so deeply linked to our self-worth. So anything that does not feel perfect, we tend to amplify it. We tend to make it mean something about who we are as women and or men and our worth, right? So I believe like the more the person is creating their own connection to their sexuality, the more they can take feedback. So it's always an insane job. And there is something that, for example, if Kevin would bring something to me that triggers me and makes me feel like, I don't want to do this. This is too much. This makes me feel wrong. Like, that's my inner work to look at it. That's one thing. But when it comes to giving feedback, ideally, if we can't give feedback without criticizing or judging, that's our inner work again. Because if we give any feedback that's shaming or blaming or judging, the person will never receive it. And that's not just about sexuality, it's about any kind of feedback, right? Where it comes from the energy of like complaining or wanting to make the other person wrong. So in case I notice that I have this kind of energy, I know that it's my time to go into my emotional body and process something so that I can say, hey, I really love when you give me a longer foreplay because this makes me feel so relaxed and so taken care of. Would you be able to do more of that? So I'm not even mentioning if the man is not giving me enough foreplay. I'm saying I really love when you do this and like more of that. And this, what this could look like. So I would actually give him examples so that he knows. Because often the best thing that we as women do when we ask for something, we're so generic. We say, I want you to love me more. I want you to make me feel beautiful and safe. But that means pretty much nothing or everything, you know? So I would say, I would love, you know, if you could take more time with my body before getting sexual. And this could mean like, you're picking a nice song that we dance to together. Maybe this looks like spooning together while you're caressing my hair and telling me compliments, right? So I could just give all kinds of options and trusting him to pick something that feels fun for him. And so it's not just giving feedback. I'm literally guiding my person how I want to be loved. Does it make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'd love to talk a little bit about in the gender role, being a woman and wanting to surrender to a man. You talk about it on your Instagram quite a bit, and I've had conversation like with my current partner and same in the tantric worlds, but where the woman wants to be more in surrender in general. Like, I feel that can be interpreted in a way, like even in your post, I saw you said submitted to a man, and obviously in a more feminist way, it's like, oh, why would you want to be submitted to a man? So can you explain?
Yes. Yeah, so that's definitely a controversial topic. Anytime I say the words being claimed by your man, I do receive a lot of comments by women saying, why would you say that? I'm not his property, right? And I get it, because that comes from the energy where for thousands of years, but we're seen as men's property, you know. So there's, you know, a lot of validity in that anger where we don't trust the masculine, right? So I just really want to acknowledge that it's fair enough that we as women, we often have not felt safe with men. So hearing those kind of statements may feel really, really far off for a lot of women, even the woman in the spiritual community doing the work, because the hurt of the masculine goes so deep, as far away as our relationship with our fathers, right? So it's, I think it's one of the hardest healing journey parts for us as women to learn how to trust the masculine, starting with our fathers, our past partners, the masculine within, and of course, you know, our minded partners. Because, you know, I also teach business. And what I see in business is that it's so much easier for a woman to go fully inside of her business, because we feel useful, we feel powerful, we bring so much value, we create impact, we feel in control. And plus, when we get paid for that, it feels amazing. So when it comes to going to love, it's so scary. It's so edgy, because we need the opposite skill set to go into such profound spaces of love, which is surrender. I literally, when I open up my heart, I don't know what's going to happen in the next moment. Is it going to receive me? Is it going to shut down? Will I be too much? Will we experience God through lovemaking? Is my shit going to come up? We never know. Right? So it's truly walking into the abyss of what's going to happen next, right? The pure unknown. So surrender is scary. And so it's fair enough that for us to open up to such, I feel often crazy levels of openness and love, we need to have so much safety. We need to be able to trust our men almost unconditionally. We need to feel that they have got our backs. We need to know that we can bring them any emotion and they will not make us wrong, right? So there are so many foundations that need to happen inside of a relationship for us to open to such ways of surrender. So, and I believe that a woman's surrender is earned. I don't think it's given freely, you know, anytime in the first week of the relationship, it's built over the years. Just like a man's commitment, it's also not given. A lot of women will rush a man's commitment and try to get into the relationship as soon as we can. But the commitment and provision and protection are also earned, right? So it's such a beautiful feedback loop journey, where the more I surrender, the more he wants to protect and provide. The more he does that, the more I surrender, right? So it's both of us kind of co-creating this beautiful polarity.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I think as a man, it took me a little bit of time also to understand how much and why it takes so much time maybe for women to feel trust or safety. And I think, you know, I can intellectually look at it, but of course, we live in a world where it hasn't been great for the past centuries, how we treat women. And yeah, for a man at first, I was like, oh, well, like I didn't get it, you know, like the vulnerability of being a woman who goes to a man's place and, you know, she's weaker, right? Things can happen. And I think there's the intellectual, okay, she could be raped. And then there's the subconscious centuries of, yeah, mistreatment of women, that even if she really trusts me and she's in Bali and it's safe, there's still that wiring, I think, that we need to understand as men, that happens within women.
Absolutely. And when it comes to sexual surrender, a woman will not fully sexually surrender unless there is a deep emotional connection. Like, that comes first. Right? So yes, we can go into fiery, passionate places of sexual ecstasy, but that deep communion that we all so long for, men, women, young, old, I believe this is just our longing to come one with God. You know, it's like the whole holistic opening. Like, that requires emotional intimacy. And to make that happen, so many factors are always, you know, either contributing to this or taking away. So for example, if, you know, a couple is dating and the man said that he would text her tomorrow and then he doesn't, that, you know, kills the potentiality of trust in the moment, because he's not following up on his word, right? So the man's integrity is his word and that's his honor. or the woman's integrity is her heart. So if I'm withholding my emotions and saying, I'm fine to go with the flow, but deep down I long for partnership, I'm not in integrity myself. If I'm feeling sadness and I'm telling him, I'm fine, don't worry, I'm not being in integrity either, right? Because my integrity as a woman is my heart. It's my capacity to reveal, you know, what I'm feeling. So that integrity is built slightly differently between the masculine and the feminine partner, his word and her heart. But we're always, you know, co-creating every single moment and seeing whether we can trust each other or not.
That's beautiful. And as a woman, how do you manage your balance of being in your feminine and having a man and asking for help? Because woman in a masculine, this that cliche of I don't need a man. But obviously being in your feminine and being with Kevin, you want to go away from that. You want to be like, hey, can you help me? And asking, and you're in a partnership. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, not being like, let's say, needy. How do you balance the two?
Yeah, so to be honest, I have no issues when it comes to asking for help.
Yeah.
I definitely used to, but, you know, it's been a very big inner journey where I just had to be okay with feeling the vulnerability of asking for something. And I believe there's nuances here, you know, asking for help with things in the house, that's not that vulnerable. It's okay. But asking to be held when I feel sad or confused, that's harder. But I feel that anytime I lean into that, especially when it's vulnerable, I invoke him to more presence. Like he wants to come closer, he wants to hold me, but only when he can feel my heart. And when it comes to in general, maybe for a woman to be vulnerable while, you know, being a powerful business owner, for example, that's hard. Like I want to acknowledge for most women, it's really hard because we are so afraid of rejection. And also many of us have not cultivated that deeper inner knowing of, I love myself even when I'm angry. I can compassionately hold my sadness and I'm okay with that. So a lot of us, we self-abandon when we feel the harder emotions. So that's the work where we begin. Like, can I hold myself the way I want my partner to hold me? Can I validate my needs that I have, or maybe more pleasure, more relaxation in the first place before, you know, like depending on the partner to give me all of that? And then once I come from that place, he wants to give me everything, of course.
It's interesting, as you're also a businesswoman, talking of polarity, so you're doing pretty well. I'm curious how you handle the money part with Kevin. And do you think providing financially is part of the masculine role and that it's important for the polarity?
That's a very beautiful question. And that depends. I know that we can have a beautiful couple, for example, where it's the woman that's who's providing financially and the man is receiving the provision. And that can work for some couples, you know? And especially right now, for example, in the coaching industry, we have so many women who have created massive financial success. And many of these women are often wanting to provide financially and be the breadwinner for the families. And I believe that this can work if in the bedroom, at home, we're able to, you know, switch the energy to the energy that feels natural to us. If the woman is more feminine, that she actually can come back to this energy and the man back to his masculine. So that can work. For us, however, we're more traditional. So, and I really love when Kevin pays for things. I even though, yes, I make money and I make good money, I feel the happiest. I feel most contained, most held, most cared for when Kevin is taking care of these things. And again, that's not an expectation or a demand. So comes from a place of, I am so happy, babe, when you get a check, right? So yeah, so right now we're not doing, you know, the full financial provision. We're heading towards that and it's in both of our values.
Cool. Well, thanks. Well, we're going towards the end, but it's been really interesting. The last topic I'd like to cover, which actually ties into the balance between like having some independence as a man and a woman when you come into a relationship and not having too much codependency, and at the same time releasing some of that independence because you're creating something together, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes here in spiritual communities, like, oh, it's your process and that's my process, and I don't need you, but you know, it's an interesting play of interdependence, but without too much codependency, without too much independence. I saw a post that I liked of the role of communities and the importance of women having a woman's circle, men having a men's circle, having support groups beyond the couple, so you're not the coach and the lover and the business partner and the best friend you can confide in. And so the man or the woman in the couple doesn't take all those roles because it's a bit too much. So the importance of having a community around, right? Can you share more on this?
Yes. So I love that you're mentioning this because I believe a lot of us, also the spiritual community, we mix up independence and sovereignty. Or like, let's say, like hyper-independence. So we say that I'm a sovereign woman, but often we use this word as a way to justify our armor, justify our incapacity to relax, receive, and surrender, right? So we just say, I'm sovereign, but deep down, actually, I'm super armored up, right? So it's not that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the difference. And then when it comes to our needs that need to be outsourced, absolutely. You know, there's a saying that a child needs a village. I say that a sacred union needs a village too. Because otherwise, if it's just us all the time trying to meet our needs just through one person, that is the most accelerated pathway to codependence. And that's not to say that we don't need each other. One of the most beautiful breakthroughs I had this year, where I just collapsed in tears in Kevin's arms, is where I had to very vulnerably admit to myself and to Kevin that I need you. And I really do. So it was no longer the feeling that I'm whole only when I don't need a man, when I can prove that. It was more realizing that I really need my man. And that is, this is part of my spiritual journey, where it's okay to want to thrive in deep connection, right? So I believe it's totally okay to need each other and know which of the needs are not necessarily meant to be met through our partners at all times. So this is why when I work with women, I will always ask, do you have a community of women you can rely on? If I'm talking to a man, I will ask him, do you have brotherhood? And many people don't. And that's an issue, because we need to have a place where we can process our relationship, our emotions, maybe receive them in touch, help play and relax outside of the relationship. Because if you do this only in the relationship, we often end up relying to process things together. And also if the couple is relaxing together all the time, this can create a lot of like hanging out space, which I love, by the way, we love hanging out and just watch, you know, movies and any trips and all of that. But if we're always relaxing together, we kind of enter like a neutral space in terms of polarity. It's like friends, but it's not exactly helping us to recharge in our masculine and feminine energies, which we do with men and women.
Mm. Thank you so much, Erika. It's been amazing. How can people like follow you more, and what do you have coming up?
Yeah, thank you so much. So I hang mostly on Instagram. So Erika Bolan, I'm there usually daily. So say hi to me, feel free to ask me any questions and what I have coming up. So when it comes to intimacy coaching, I am currently enrolling private clients for somatic work. And when it comes to feminine leadership and business coaching, I have a lot coming up, from programs on how to launch your offerings, from programs for new entrepreneurs, a higher level business mastermind, and many other things. So just send me a DM and I'll be super happy to see what's the best way for me to support you.
Cool. And we'll put the link in the description of the video. Thank you so much also to the listeners. So as usual, you can like, share, subscribe if you like this video. And Ulrika, I'd love you to share what you'd like to share as we're touching the end of this episode. And thank you so much for your time and your courage and sharing your knowledge on the topic.
Thank you. Let's see. Just a little message that's coming through for, I guess, the feminine beings. I believe the most courageous thing we can do as women is to reveal. Reveal what's happening in the moment. If you notice that little pulse of desire, your desire for a hug, let it come out. You notice that pulse of shutting down because he's not being present. Reveal that, right? So when we're able to reveal and express in the moment when things are coming up, this creates so much openness for connection. That is real. That is devoid of story. It's just heart to heart. So my message to you is revealing what's happening to you in the present moment is one of the biggest spiritual practices that you can, you know, offer to your beloved.
Aho. Thank you, Erika, and thank you to the listener.
Thank you.